Hello, my name is Eileen, and I have the pantograph for Monday, February 3rd, 2020, and we will begin with the headline news on the front page with the article entitled, All Winners, Annual Puppy Bowl, a Fun Way to Increase Adoptions for Pet Shelter. Normal. By Kevin Bartlow. Normal. The focus for Tyler and Paula Roche of Normal on Sunday had nothing to do with San Francisco or Kansas City or the Super Bowl game in Miami. Instead, their attention centered on a small half-Australian Shepherd and half-German Shepherd puppy they were adopting through Pets Central Helps, a no-kill shelter based in Normal. "He's so cute," Paula said. "His name is Romeo, but we are going to call him Mac." He was one of several puppies adopted Sunday during the third annual Puppy Bowl, held this year at the Marriott Hotel in Uptown Normal. The event serves as a fundraiser and also gives prospective pet owners a chance to meet some of the puppies available for adoption. "This is getting better every year," said President and Executive Director Lisa Kitchens. "Everyone has a great time, and it's important for our fundraising." After 100 people attended the Puppy Bowl, in which the dogs were provided bandanas representing either the Kansas City Chiefs or San Francisco 49ers. Points were scored when one of the dogs carried a toy placed in the fenced-in area across a goal line. "I can't really tell what's going on," said 14-year-old Brianna Waters of Bloomington, who didn't have a dog in the fight but loved watching the puppies. "But I could watch this all night." Pet Central Helps has operated out of the headquarters at 360 Wiley Drive in Normal for the past 3 years, but expects to move into a new space by March 1st, Kitchens said. "The shelter is virtually done, but we will still need a lot of things for our cat condos, medical equipment, and furnishing," she said. In the 3 years of existence, Pet Central Helps has adopted out almost 3,000 animals, she said. "We are very fortunate to have some awesome foster homes," she said. "We are so fortunate to have such great people helping us out. Mike and Brenda Brady know all about fostering dogs. We have fostered 270 so far," Brenda Brady said. "For us, it is all about saving lives. We enjoy teaching them how to bond so they can be adopted, helping them to feel safe out of a scary environment, and giving them a place to feel safe." Jenny Render of Pekin brought her 9-year-old Cavalier King Charles Spaniel, Avenue, to meet the other puppies while her son considered adopting a puppy of his own. Avenue was very popular. "People love Avenue, and he's always the center of attention," she said. Todd Nance of Bloomington was considering adopting a pet, but his 15-year-old daughter, Bridget, was well past that stage. "I've been wanting a puppy for like 12 years," she said, "and when I get one, it's going to be the best one ever and be the star of the Puppy Bowl every year. I'll train him just for that." On to more local and state news with the title, Normal Considers Pot Facility. Medical Cannabis Stop Shop Wants to Add Recreational Option by Kevin Bartlow. Normal. The Normal City Council will consider a special use permit to allow for Bloomington Normal's first recreational cannabis retailer Monday night. Last week, the Normal Zoning Board of Appeals voted to recommend granting the permit to the Green Solution at 501 West Northtown Road. The company already operates a medical cannabis dispensary and would continue to do so if the recreational permit is approved. Officials have applied for a recreational permit from the state of Illinois, but state officials will not consider the request prior to zoning approval from the town of Normal. The Green Solution does not propose significant changes to the existing site, which currently contains a one-story building, 21 parking spaces, and two access points, one from Northtown and another from Eagle, which would be widened to meet city codes. In a report to council members, town planner Mercy Davison said the proposed special use permit meets the general special use standards, including those specific to adult use cannabis dispensaries. The location of the business is within the appropriate zoning district and far from any residences, schools, or child-oriented facilities. Although there is a small church to the east, it is outside the minimum 75-foot separation distance. The security plan is thorough and will have to meet the strict standards set by the state of Illinois. The hours of operation are reasonable, and the parking exceeds the code minimum for retail operations, her report stated. If approved Monday, there is no timetable available on when the state might approve the license and the company be permitted to sell recreational cannabis. In its application for the permit, company officials said they will have special staffing provisions to deal with potential excess parking and traffic in the first 2 weeks of operation. The Green Solution would operate from 8 a.m. until 10 p.m. every day of the week. The Green Solution does not include a cultivation growing operation and are not anticipating any odor issues. However, should there be an overwhelming odor of any kind that the state finds needs mitigation, the company will install a charcoal filter to the building HVAC system or employ another air treatment system, according to the application. Recreational cannabis use became legal January 1 in Illinois. In other business, the council will consider amending the lease agreement for the Illinois State University Art Gallery. In 2013, the town approved a lease to allow ISU to use the West End ground floor of the Uptown Station parking deck for an art gallery related to the university's education activities. Under that lease, ISU paid an annual lease amount tied to the cost of the build-out of the space. The last annual lease payment covered the period of March 1, 2019 through February 28, 2020. Next, literacy programs receiving funds. Bloomington. Books to Benefit is providing $7,000 to STAR Adult Literacy, $2,000 to Youth Build McLean County, and funding two $500 scholarships for non-traditional students at Heartland Community College. The nonprofit holds semi-annual book sales to raise money for local literacy programs and funds the scholarships with proceeds from a bake sale held during the book sale. Books to Benefit accepts donations of gently used books, CDs, and DVDs in person, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Wednesdays and Saturdays at 360 Wiley Drive, Suite 700, Bloomington, or drop boxes are at Wiley Drive, the YWCA, and Wesley United Methodist Church in Bloomington. More information is at books2benefit.com. Bloomington. Schools get conservation grants. Two schools in McLean County are among 27 recipients of Illinois Schoolyard Habitat Action Grants from the Illinois Department of Natural Resources and Illinois Conservation Foundation. Lexington Junior High School, grades 7 and 8, was awarded $179.09 for a pollinator garden project. Mulberry School, Normal, grades preschool through 3, was awarded $447.44 for a pollinator garden and outdoor classroom project. Bloomington, homeless program sign-up continues. Home Sweet Home Ministries, in partnership with Trinity Lutheran Church, continues to accept reservations for the 4th annual Night in a Car Homelessness Simulation event. Night in a Car will be from 7 p.m. Friday to 7 a.m. Saturday as participants spend the night in their car in the parking lot of Trinity Lutheran, 801 South Madison Street in Bloomington. Participants will have opportunities to come inside for hot beverages, snacks, and restroom breaks throughout the night. A new activity this year is an escape room as participants learn about homelessness as they work through 4 seasons of obstacles. In Normal, ISU earns praise for community activities. Carnegie Foundation's special classification will last for 6 years by the Pantograph staff. Illinois State University's community engagement activities are being recognized by the Carnegie Foundation. The university received the Carnegie Foundation for the Advancement of Teaching's elective classification for community engagement after an extensive application process documenting its commitment to the community engagement. It is among only about 350 institutions nationwide to receive this classification, which lasts for 6 years. President Larry Dietz noted that civic engagement is a core value of ISU. Through ISU's Center for Community Engagement and Service Learning, we support students, faculty, and staff with in-class and out-of-class learning experiences that partner with the community, said Dietz. These experiences are prime examples of how we live our values each day. Examples of civic engagement include alternative spring breaks in the United States and abroad, the annual Bring It Back to Normal, during which students help people in the community, Holiday Helper, which provides gifts to youths or families in need, and volunteer work with various agencies such as the Boys and Girls Club and Unity Community Center. There are so many amazing experiences that Illinois State is offering its students, said Christine Bruckner, Assistant Director of Assessment, Data Management, and Grant Writing for ISU's Center. It's not just that we received this designation, it's what we've done with and for our students and community. On to some state news. Chicago. State funds lag for census work by the Associated Press. Chicago. Some of the groups tasked with helping ensure that Illinois gets a good turnout for the 2020 census haven't received their state funding yet. Census advocates worry that the lag is funding the group's efforts would hurt the state's showing in the 10-year count, which determines how many U.S. seats we how many U.S. House seats each state gets and how to distribute billions of federal dollars to local communities. Only a few of the 9 regional intermediary outreach groups in the Chicago region have received the state funding they need to take on the mammoth task of trying to ensure that every resident participates or is accounted for in this year's census, the Chicago Tribune reported. The stakes are high, as Illinois has lost population in the last few years, and experts predict that it could lose one or even two congressional seats. Governor J.B. Pritzker, a Democrat, previously blamed his Republican predecessor for the delay. Governor Bruce Rauner's term in office was dominated by budget wars that overshadowed other issues. Pritzker announced last year that he would allocate $29 million for census outreach. "We need to get the funds out the door as soon as possible," he said at the time. Department of Human Services said its goal is to get the money out as soon as possible. Several groups that haven't received their state funding yet have pushed on, regardless. The Carol Robertson Center for Learning, a nonprofit, recently hosted an event for parents with a worker from the U.S. Census Bureau. The group plans to use laptops and tablets once they receive funding. Some have focused on reaching groups of people who have historically been difficult to count, including immigrants. Organizers recently held a 2-day training course for community organizers at Casa Minocan in Pilsen, which is heavily Mexican neighborhood, is a heavily Mexican neighborhood in Chicago. "We need everyone to understand and know the importance of the census and know why we should all be counted," Oswald Alvarez, one of the state's census coordinators, told the crowd in Spanish. The Census Bureau will start sending mailings to households across the country by March 12. Healthy curiosity can protect you. This is by Lori Bergman. Cold and flu season is here. At the first sneezing fit or sign of a sore throat, the question is not how long will this last, but where did I get this from? We tend to get vindictive when we are forced to the sick bed. We don't like it when our orderly lives are disrupted. Oh, sure. We hide the attitude and put on our best pathetic sick person face, but on the inside, a lot of us slip into the detective mode. "I may be weak, fatigued, and sweating out a fever, but I can still muster the strength to cruise through a list of possible sources of contamination." Chief suspects are always the grands, those lovable, adorable little ones we cherish dearly. The same ones who cough and sneeze into the crooks of their arms and seconds later spray tabletops, countertops, and doorknobs. Next on the list of possibilities, merely by reason of proximity, is the husband. It is never him, though, because he's never sick. It's one of the more irritating things about him. Always healthy. When you're not feeling well, the last thing you want is to be reminded of others who enjoy perpetual good health. Once family members have been eliminated as suspects, I expand the circle to consider the places I've been. There's always the possibility of picking up something at the grocery. Who knows what reside on those carts or the produce? Did I really lick my finger to open that plastic bag? The gym is a possibility as well. It's easy to pick up something from an elliptical or a treadmill that wasn't wiped down. Isn't that ironic? We get sick trying to stay healthy. Then there's the ATM. Maybe it was that guy ahead of me in line. It's going to be hard to track down a stranger. It could have been the cache itself. Money is a huge carrier of germs. Maybe it was that kiosk I used to order food. The findings of a recent study on all the microbes found on kiosks are disgusting. The conclusion was never to order food at a kiosk, at least not with your hand. Use your elbow. Maybe it was that friend I hadn't seen in ages, the one who gave me a big hug and who knows what else. Paranoia is a faithful bedside companion to cold and flu season. All the detective work is so exhausting that it can add another full day of recovery or lead to a complete relapse. Maybe no one gave me this bug. Maybe I gave it to myself, inhaled at the wrong time, rubbed my eyes with some microbe on my fingertips, or yawned wide when a germ caught a ride on an air current and sailed my way. The truth is, there's no way to know, but that doesn't mean I'll stop wondering or compiling suspects. Here's a piece on Social Security by Elaine Popejoy. She's the Social Security District Manager in Bloomington. Social Security is an earned benefit. Your earnings history is a record of your progress toward your benefits. Social Security keeps track of your earnings so we can pay you the benefits you've earned over your lifetime. This is why reviewing your Social Security earnings record is so important. If an employer didn't properly report just 1 year of your work earnings to us, your future benefit payments from Social Security could be less than they should be. Over the course of a lifetime, that could cost you tens of thousands of dollars in retirement or other benefits to which you are entitled. Sooner is definitely better than when it comes to identifying and reporting problems with your earnings record. As time passes, you may no longer have easy access to past tax records, and some employers may no longer exist or be able to provide past payroll information. While it's the responsibility of your employers, both past and present, to provide accurate earnings information to Social Security so you get credit for your contributions you've made through payroll taxes, you should still inform us of any errors or omissions you find. You're the only person who can look at your lifetime earnings record and verify that it is complete and correct. The easiest and most efficient way to validate your earnings record is to visit www.socialsecurity.gov/myaccount to set up or sign in to your own My Social Security account. You should carefully review each year of your listed earnings and use your own records, such as W-2s and tax returns, to confirm them. Keep in mind that earnings from this year and last year may not be listed yet. Notify us right away if you spot errors by calling 1-800-772-1213. You can find more detailed instructions on how to correct your Social Security earnings record at www.socialsecurity.gov/pubs/en-05-10081.pdf. Remember, you can access important information like this anytime at www.socialsecurity.gov and do much of your own business with us online. So let's visit Dear Abby today. Her headline is, Grandson Living Rent-Free Aggravates. First letter. Dear Abby, our 24-year-old grandson, Raffi, a college grad from a respected technical institution, couldn't find a job for a year after graduation. He has been living with us for more than 6 months without paying rent because we wanted to help him get on his feet. Currently, his only responsibility is helping somewhat after dinner. He now has a good job. I should mention that Rafi tends to be narcissistic. He frequently wears his baseball hat to meals, even though I have asked him not to. He can also be difficult to deal with, attacking me when there's a difference of opinion or if he's angry about something. When we live in a 3-bedroom condo, what rules are legitimate for me to require? Can I ask him to keep his room straight and take his hat off at meals or when going out for dinner? How much room and board should we ask for? We have frequent guests, family, our friends, his friends, because we live close to the beach in Florida. Space gets to be an issue, and he refuses to allow visiting cousins to sleep in his room, even though there are two double beds. I would welcome your input, Abby. Signed, Out of Control in Florida. Her response: Dear Out of Control, you seem to have forgotten that the condo Rafi lives in belongs to you. Because it is your home and he has been living rent-free, you should be making the rules. It's time to sit him down and tell him together that if he wants to continue living there, he will 1. Keep his room neat at all times. 2. Remove his hat during the meals he shares with you. 3. Allow the visiting cousins to use the extra bed in his room, which is really your guest room. 4. I hesitate to suggest you ask him for money because if you turn the arrangement into a business deal, you may lose leverage. But I do think you should set a deadline for your gainfully employed, but difficult, grandson to leave. With the money he has been socking away on rent, he should be able to accumulate enough to afford a place of his own. Next letter. Dear Abby, as kids, we were taught not to kiss on the mouth unless a spouse or a romantic partner. We never kissed our children on the mouth and felt disgusted when we witnessed it. We see it happen all the time now, especially on TV. It never happened in the 50s and 60s. Is my family wrong? Signed, Holding Back in Hamilton, Ohio. Her response: Dear Holding Back, it's a matter of personal preference and upbringing. Giving a family member a peck on the lips is neither right or wrong, and I have certainly never considered a parent or sibling showing affection in this way to be shocking or disgusting. Readers, what do you think? We'll take a short break now and return with the second half of the pantograph dated February 3rd, 2020.